gentlemen, our national anthem.
Round, 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 Sierra Lounge.
The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
"We see
me." The loudspeaker spoke up and said,
put your hands together for Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge.
Welcome to the Ground Zero Lounge. I'm Clyde Lewis. Thank you all for coming out on this cold Monday night. Give yourselves a round of applause just for getting up and getting out and getting moving. God. You know, I've been just so cold lately. It's been really freezing out here, but I'll tell you, it's going to be a good show tonight. A lot of great things to announce. First of all, we're being heard on ideocast.com. Give them a round of applause for broadcasting us tonight. Get really loud, too, so they can hear you on the internet. Sometimes, there you go. Somebody say, how many people does Clyde play to? He plays to about five people. No, we play to a lot of people. We'll get that word out there. Also, Media Monarchy, who also puts our show on. We're glad they do that as well. Give them a hand. Media Monarchy, good people. MediaMonarchy.com, actually. And we got Ground Zero Total Recall every week. Real-time Ground Zero shows from the past still playing. We give them a round of applause, too. Thank you all for supporting Ground Zero. I got a special announcement. I don't know if you can read this because of the washout, but it says, Uncovering the Truth, Ground Zero with Clyde Lewis returns the 2nd of March, 2009 on News Radio 750 KXL. We finally established we're going back on terrestrial radio Monday through Friday from 10 until midnight. So give KXL a round of applause for bringing Ground Zero back to terrestrial radio. And we're still going to do the Ground Zero Lounge on Monday night, so we hope to get a bigger crowd for the Monday night show so that you can get an idea of what I'm going to be talking about on Monday night. So you get a sneak preview, and who knows, we may even do a broadcast live from here. We don't know. A lot of interesting things going on in the world of Ground Zero, and we're very happy to be doing this. We've been doing this now here at Dante's, I think, for about 3 years. And so that's the we've been doing the Ground Zero Lounge for about 8 years. We started off with Bodacious Classics. We moved here. The rules of the game are simple. This is not a library, and hopefully it's not a one-way discussion. We like to do a talk show here. We have audience participation. If people want to get up on the microphones, we have a microphone here and a microphone over there. The reason we have two microphones is because if somebody wants to debate the other person, they can do so. If they want to debate me, that's fine. If they have something they want to share with the audience about the topic, that's great, too. And tonight is a very, very, very interesting show. We call it Big Hairy Inaugural Balls. And the reason why we're calling it that is because how many people saw the inauguration last week? We talked a little bit about it prior to. A couple people watched it. We talked about something last week called Amun-Ra, where we were talking about paying attention to the words being said during the prayers and during the speeches and even during the inaugural swearing-in ceremony. And wouldn't you know it, I mentioned here on this stage that you should pay attention to it, and who fucks up everything? The Chief Justice and Barack Obama, they just couldn't get the words out. And neither could the prayers be given properly or anything else. We're going to talk about that, too. It's going to be interesting because we're going to point out exactly what I meant last week when I said pay attention to what's being said. Tonight's show, as I said, we're going to mix several topics or discussions that I've given in the past. The dots continue to connect, and they seem to write themselves. That's the thing that's most interesting about shows like this is when I sit down and I put them together, I always... My brain is always hurting for something to talk about, but when stuff starts falling into place and the dots start connecting and things start falling into place, I just sit there and just let it all write itself out. So tonight's one of those shows. You'll see that the magic that I've talked about, magic within, you know, the realms of the elite is going on right now because of the synchronicities, and it's very, very serious for our future. You can pretty much figure out what the future is going to hold by looking around you and seeing what words are being triggered, what metaphors are being said, what archetypes are being resurrected. You got to pay attention to these things. And those of you that have attended past Ground Zero shows, you know that what I'm talking about is true. Now, I know that a lot of you won't agree with me about what I'm about to say, but I want you to understand that it's not about agreeing with me. That's not what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is I'm looking for you to understand the relevance of what I am talking about. Not agreeing or disagreeing. It's nice to embrace the elusive mystery of everything. Now, it seems that when anyone says anything bad about Barack Obama in the media or otherwise anywhere else, you see a lot of people looking at them like, hey, you're from a different planet. You're not digging my groove. You're not listening to what I'm saying. This guy is going to change the world. This guy is going to change the world and lead us into a better way. And I also know that sometimes when I talk bad about Barack Obama later on in shows and everything else, I hear people in the bar start talking louder than me. And like I say, if you have something you want to say that's against what I'm saying because you're a big Obama fan, then by all means go to the microphone. But don't talk above me because this is something that it's a discussion that's very important. I prepared this a long time. So I'm going to get into Barack Obama a little bit since it's about the inauguration last week. We all know that Obama's position is a great thing for history. It is an interesting turn of events that we have now an African-American president. But we must understand that the power elite in this country know how to fool the American people. They have so many tricks up their arsenal and so many devilish activities in the works that many people will abide with Obama even if it were to be the detriment to the country and to their well-being. It's because anything that goes on, if you say anything that detracts, what you have is you have people saying to you, oh, come on. Give the guy a chance. Okay, we are. We're going to give him a chance. And I'm not saying, I can't say anything bad about Obama now. But what I can say is there are some things going on that you need to be aware of regarding Barack Obama. Go ahead.
Well, first off on that topic, I was just going to say that I think Barack Obama is capable of greater evil than George W. Bush. And it starts with the fact that it's because he's more intelligent than George W. Bush.
That's true.
And more charismatic than George Bush. And
yeah, go ahead. Give him a hand. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, it's true.
And the thing is, it's like when the adage that the greatest trick the devil ever played is making people believe he didn't exist.
The devil?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it is. And if you can fool people into thinking that the devil's gone or we vanquished the devil and the devil's still there, that's an even greater trick, a better feat. Now, we've all been washed in the idea that Obama is fulfilling the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. Hell, I heard that the whole time during the inauguration. But let me tell you something. He's nothing like Dr. Martin Luther King because Martin Luther King was a man of peace, and Obama continues to preach the war effort. He wants the military-industrial complex to increase. He wants all these things to happen, and they're still preaching the same thing about terrorism. We're not going to get out of this terrorism nightmare, not by Barack Obama, not by any other means, because it makes money to basically create the police state and keep it moving and keep it going forward. See? And that's what's always irritating me about this whole thing, is that as he stands there and smirks like Mussolini, it's just as irritating as watching Bush smirk. You know, because he knows that this is what's going to happen. He knows that we're heading for some sort of a big, I mean, Biden even said, he said, there's going to be some attack. You watch. It's going to happen. Well, okay. So threaten us with nightmares, threaten us with fear, the same as you used to be. Also, after the inauguration, did you notice that Pepsi changed its logo? They changed it because they said that Obama refreshes the nation. That's why they changed the logo for Pepsi. Now, I noticed something else, too, that a lot of people don't know about. Back in the 30s and 40s, it wasn't Pepsi. It was Coca-Cola that changed their logo for one Adolf Hitler. That's a Coca-Cola swastika. It's a thing to open up a bottle of Coke. You see, the words of Dr. King have been betrayed by the advent of sickening adulation, corporate product placement, and meaningless oratory that disguises itself as post-racial. But it's all been done before. This time it was Coca-Cola doing it for Hitler. Pepsi is doing it for Obama. You see the parallels? Okay? I'm not saying that he's Hitler, but what I'm saying is you see the parallels. You, product placement. They did it back in the 30s and 40s. This is your lucky piece right here, it says. Your lucky piece. You can use it to open up your Coca-Cola. An American drink supporting the Fuhrer. The crowds at the Obama coronation were so out of touch with reality that I witnessed some very troubling things. I'm going to point those things out to you tonight. I want you to pay attention to these things because they're very important, because we did talk about how words mean something and how oratory means something and how it sends information out and people receive it, and sometimes subconsciously they don't know what they're receiving. In the book The Crowd, John Plotz demonstrates that leaders with fascist intent are well aware of how they can cause a crowd to agree with them. Through certain words, phrases, and visuals, a crowd can become terrifying, crowds are horrifying for the most part because they have a will of their own and they act independent of rationality. Obama capitalizes on that, and so do many of his top supporters. When a crowd is part of an experimental operation, you begin to see anomalies that are very peculiar. Some are downright disturbing. And we're witnessing right now an experiment in chaos with the Obama campaign. And I'm going to show you how it's done. First of all, remember I was telling you about Pastor Rick Warren. And I said, pay attention to what he has to say because he's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. And he's going to be doing some ecumenical trick. Well, he did with his prayer. When Pastor Rick Warren gave the invocation, his words were very ecumenical. He opened up with an address to God. Then he proceeded to speak out to the Jews by quoting from the Shema, which is, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one." And then he spoke to the Muslims by saying that God is compassionate and merciful. That's what the Muslims say when they're talking about God. He is compassionate and merciful. He did speak of Christ and then ended with the Lord's Prayer. It was the most inclusive prayer that I've ever heard a guy give. It was to reach every faith, an ecumenical prayer, and this is the type of thing that they're going to be looking for in the future, is having a widespread faith. Now, he mentioned Christ, too, but he did it in several languages, which is, of course, another inclusive trick that they did because he wanted to avoid all the controversy. In fact, it was really interesting to note that Pastor Warren didn't offend anybody during the prayer, except there was one problem that I did have, and that is when he mentioned that Barack Obama was going to be the 44th president and that he was also going to be the first African-American president, people were cheering during a prayer. Now, check me if I'm wrong, but prayers are supposed to be reverent, right? And God doesn't like you cheering during a prayer. Thou shalt not cheer. I was very disappointed in that. And so it's another example of how crowds, when they're together, they're thinking this is a speech when it was actually a prayer. Okay? And I didn't like the idea of them cheering during a prayer. It was kind of bad. Another thing is that Obama crowds show just as much, if not more, ego and callousness as they did in the neocon Republican contingencies back in 2000. Many in the black religious communities are beginning to feel a bit uneasy about Barack Obama, and some believe that if Barack Obama does not tone down the messianic rhetoric, that the nation may wind up divided and that race resentment will once again rise up and destroy the progress which has been made as far as race relations are concerned. There's been a lot of people who have been mentioning this now. They won't report it. They won't report it because it doesn't sound good. But there are people that are saying bad things. Like, for example, I stumbled upon a quote from Dr. James David Manning that he gave during his Manning report prior to the inauguration. He stated that January 20th, 2009, Inauguration Day, would be the day of the Joker. It was a metaphor that hit me like a cudgel because of what I've talked about in the past about the Joker, the Trickster, and the Dark Knight movie. And you're going to see some interesting things going on here with that imagery as well. Manning, who called Obama Satan, warned his audience that the new president is the ultimate trickster and that he will deceive us all, landing us into the tribulation period. Now, for those of you who don't know what the tribulation is, it's kind of an eschatological type of thing where they talk about how the Christians are going to be pitted against each other, kind of like a civil war, but they're going to be triumphant in the end, and Jesus is going to return and all this stuff. So it was pretty apocalyptic what he was talking about. Literally talking about a civil war between Christians, Muslims, and Jews, and that Obama would be in the middle of it. Now, the movie Dark Knight is actually about a civil war between the crime bosses and the police in Gotham City. And the Joker, of course, is the head of all these crime bosses, and he moves around the city and basically wreaks havoc, and he just wants to see Gotham burn. Kind of like what we talked about in the Nero decree, where we talked about scorched earth, where some people, they're that evil, they just want to see people suffer. And that's how the Joker operates. The Trickster, the Joker. We're well aware of the fact that when people are desperate, they wind up eating each other. That's what the Joker said in the movie. Well, Dr. Manning didn't know that his words would be basically activating a meme and chaos would happen afterwards. When Obama spoke at his inauguration, he referred to more storms on the horizon. And this was kind of interesting because I saw a headline that says, "Obama's whirlwind, first day, economy, war, and more." Remember I was talking about the angel in the whirlwind last week. This same meme is being triggered by the media, and it's also being talked about with Obama. The angel in the whirlwind meme is actually the whirlwind war, whirlwind death, whirlwind destruction. It's still being pushed. The old spells are still being pushed on the people and keeping them pretty much mesmerized. And then, of course, we have more new spells that we're dealing with, too. This time, the spell was delivered by a source that no one would have suspected. It was a spell of division and racial dissonance, and it was also sealed with amen. Remember I told you about how we do not seal things with amen unless we agree with them. However, the crowd just loved a little bit of a prayer that was given by Reverend Joseph Lowry, where he delivered a benediction at the inaugural ceremony, and while the mainstream media ignored this, the whole prayer ended up being the most racist thing I have ever heard coming out of a man's mouth. Here is the prayer. Lord, in the memory of all the saints who from their labors rest and in the joy of the new beginning, we ask you to help us work for that day when black will not be asked to get back, when brown can stick around, when yellow will be the mellow, when the red man can get a head man, and when whites will embrace what is right. Let all those who do justice and mercy say amen. The crowd said amen and agreed with him. When whites do something right. Boy, I sure would love it I could say if those black people pull their heads out of their ass and do something right every once in a while. That would really make me sound like a great person who's into racial equality, right? Of course, no one said that this was a racist statement because he said, well, he was quoting an old song from the 60s. It's a big civil rights thing. No, I went and I looked up the song. He twisted the meaning. I'm going to show you the song that he quoted. Actually, I want to point out something else, too. During the prayer, there was loud laughter while he was doing this shit. I always thought that God didn't approve of laughter during prayers either. That it was pretty much, you know, there are people out there that want to worship and they need some reverence. And they didn't have reverence during that prayer. What he talked about, this song thing that Reverend Lowry had quoted, it's actually, if you're white, you're all right. If you're brown, stick around. If you're yellow, you're mellow. But if you're black, get back. You notice how the words are different? He redid the words. He made them more racist. And I've been arguing with people and say, oh, there's no boogeyman there. There's no boogeyman there. Would you agree that it's a racist statement by applause that he gave? A couple people? How many people don't think it's a racist statement? It was a racist statement. It was given in a prayer, and it was supported by the crowd with amens. This is an amazing thing. And I had said, be careful of what you say. Be careful of who you think and what you think about during these things, because prayers and words mean something. And Amen, or Amen Ra, is the sun god, and if we decide to piss him off, he's going to do something to us. That is, if you believe in that shit. So, as I said, the Amen Ra show last week, we're talking about rituals. We're talking about hidden meanings in rituals, hidden meanings in things that are said, whether or not words mean something, whether or not prayers mean something, whether or not inaugural speeches mean something, and obviously, they do mean something. Because of what happened during the entire inaugural. A lot of chaotic imbalance going on. Seems like faithfully was a word that Mr. Obama could not say, as in, I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States. However, that slip up was lost on the crowd that was high on the historical moment of the first African-American savior being crowned. I mean, of course he goofed up, but they didn't understand what word he goofed up, and that was, I will faithfully execute. He couldn't get that out of his mouth, and they blamed it on the Chief Justice. Believe it or not, here's a trivia question for you. Who was the first African-American president of the United States? Anyone have a guess? Certainly not Barack Obama. Why? Because he fucked up the inaugural address, inaugural speech, the oath. The first African-American president, many people aren't going to realize this, and a lot of people will argue it, but by constitutional right and by law, Condoleezza Rice was the first African-American president. And the first woman president, too. Since Obama screwed up the inaugural speech or the inaugural swearing-in ceremony, there's some things. I read some constitutional stuff that's really interesting, and I'm going to share it with you right now. It's Amendment 20, Article 2. Of the Constitution, you can look this up. Condoleezza Rice actually, for a time, they say it was only a short amount of time, but I think it was longer, and I'm sure there's some constitutional lawyers that will challenge this. Condoleezza Rice was president of the United States on January 20th between 12 noon and 12:05. However, it's being debated that she was president a day or so, and this is how, and I'll give you the whole rundown, constitutional law. The 20th Amendment, Article 2, states that the terms of the president and vice president shall end at noon, the 20th day of January. That means at noon, on Inauguration Day, President Bush and Dick Cheney are no longer president of the United States. That means we're without a president. However, there are provisions, right? And the provisions are that the Presidential Succession Act states that if reason of failure to qualify, there is neither a president nor vice president to discharge the powers and duties of the office of president, then the Speaker of the House of Representatives will become the president upon resignation as Speaker and as Representative of Congress act as president. Now, Section 19B states that the president pro tempore of the Senate shall act as president under the same terms and conditions if the Speaker of the House fails to qualify. Now, here's how they failed to qualify. Pelosi and Byrd both did not give up their congressional seats, so therefore they cannot qualify to be president of the United States. So in that time frame, they were not president. Pelosi was not president, and neither was Byrd. Okay? So there was a brief window just afternoon when Condi Rice became the first African-American woman president of the United States. Now, here's where it gets tricky. After Yo-Yo Ma did his wonderful violin solo, and since that Obama could not utter the oath of office correctly, based on a technicality, Joe Biden was actually the 44th president of the United States. Now, it's debated because of the fact that they don't know whether or not Biden would have been empowered since Obama did not take the oath of office the right way. So the confusing part is whether or not Condi Rice was still president even after Joe Biden was sworn in as vice president or the 44th president. So we either can remember the short amount of time the day that Joe Biden was president of the United States, or we remember the shorter amount of time that Condi Rice was the first black American woman president of the United States. Okay? Does that make any sense? Constitutionally speaking, I'm right. Constitutionally speaking, I'm correct. And you can be the smart ass at the water cooler tomorrow and say, did you hear about that Condi Rice was president for like maybe 15, 20 minutes, maybe even a full day? Or did you remember that the 44th president of the United States was really Joe Biden and not really Barack Obama? Go ahead.
Could you explain once more for those of us who's slow like me, what exactly happened to make Condi president, and was that before Biden was sworn in?
What happened was that on Inauguration Day, the Constitution states that the president and the vice president are no longer powerful. Okay? What happens is that the then presidential power falls upon the Speaker of the House. But since Nancy Pelosi had not given up her seat in Congress, and the next in line didn't either, it falls upon the Secretary of State. Condi Rice was Secretary of State. She then becomes the temporary president of the United States. She then can officiate as president if they do not swear in a vice president. They swore in Joe Biden. Joe Biden then becomes the vice president of the United States. He becomes the power, the guy in power until they inaugurate the president. The president then is Barack Obama. However, since he screwed up the oath of office, he did not do it right. The Constitution states that you have to say it a certain way, otherwise it's not valid. So therefore, Joe Biden was the 44th president of the United States, or Condi Rice was the first black American woman president.
Okay, and that all makes sense, except I'm sorry if I'm holding up the show. Could you explain what you meant about Nancy Pelosi not giving up a Congress seat?
She didn't give up her seat. So the Constitution states that we cannot allow this. You can't allow them to be president.
Like she was supposed to? What are you talking about?
Well, that's the thing, is that she can or she can't. And she held on to that position, so she cannot be president of the United States.
Well, because she didn't know that the succession was taking place.
No, she didn't know the succession was going to happen that way, but it didn't happen that way. But see, I'm not a constitutional lawyer. I'm just going on what I read.
Okay, I think I get it now.
Okay. And I talked over with a judge or two, and they told me that I'm pretty much onto something, so there you go. Obama was sworn in again on Wednesday, the 21st, 2009, in a private ceremony with no Bible. It was done out of an abundance of caution. That's what they said. The abundance of caution was because of the very thing I just talked about. Joe Biden would be president, or Condoleezza Rice would be president. Okay? That's why they did it. Abundance of caution, because they didn't want any lawyers to challenge it.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Interestingly enough, during the inauguration, Barack Obama was referred to in three different ways. Barack H. Obama, Barack Hussein Obama, and Barack Obama. The funny part about it all, that is not his real name. His real name is Barry Sotero. His birth name is Barry Sotero. It is not Barack Obama. It's true. He changed his name. And what's interesting about the name change is that makes me wonder if it's a regnal name. Laugh at it, but it's true. Barack Hussein Obama was changed, and I'm wondering if he changed it for two reasons. One, well, actually three. One reason, he changed his religion. Two, he knew that he was going to be something, so he wanted to change his name to a regnal name. And three, he did it because he wanted to have a state name. My real name is not Clyde Lewis. I changed my name so I could have a state name so I could use it for business. Okay? But he changed his name for a number of reasons. No one knows why. If you want to know what a regnal name is, just look at Star Wars. The movie Star Wars is full of regnal names. For example, you take a look at someone like Queen Amidala. Her real name is Padme Naberi. She adopted the name of Queen Amidala because in Naboo they're allowed to have state names. Obi-Wan Kenobi is Ben Kenobi's state name or his religious regnal name. Okay? When Emperor Palpatine became evil, he changed his name to Darth Sidious. And, of course, Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader. It's a part of changing your name because it's a new life. It's a new way of thinking. It's a new way of... It's a new beginning, actually. Yes, cults do that as well. When you're in a cult or when you're in a religious group, sometimes you change your name. If you're a nun, you change your name. If you're the Pope, you change your name. Okay? So it makes you wonder if it's a regnal name or not. That's the question that people want to know. And I always joke that, you know, Barack Obama does sound like a Star Wars character. So does Osama bin Laden, all these guys. They all sound like Star Wars characters. Now, Barack Obama is also being nicknamed Barky. Have anybody heard people calling him Barky in the media? It's weird, but they are. They're calling him Barky now. And what's scary about Barky is actually a form of the word Barker, as in Carnival Barker. Okay? Carnival Barkers always dress up in flamboyant costumes. Some of them even paint their faces up to look like clowns. And they basically are the ones that open the gate to the carnival and say, come and play. So, Barky is what they're calling a Barack Obama now, which really is kind of interesting when you consider the whole situation with the Joker, as Dr. Manning had called him. The Barker or Barky is also in reference to the name of Anubis, which is the dog that opened the way or opened the heavens for the arrival of the gods. Anubis stood guard over the city of the dead also. Now, does anybody remember what Rex Church said? It was the day that we did Grounds for Baphomet here. We had Freeman here, and he talked about Sirius, and he talked about the dog star, and I kind of launched him on my Sirius kick. He said, I await the day when the beings from Sirius, the dog star, or Canis Major reveal themselves to the world. They are the wise ones, the beautiful, the gods of the deep. They shall return to unlock the gate and let loose Leviathan or the Kraken, and they will return and they will rule before the culmination of time, which is 2012. The whole Sirius thing is coming back now. The Sirius dog star magic that I had talked about before. The star that paves the way for the purification. Here's a picture of Obama with a star above his head, just like a picture of Akhenaten with a star above his head. And it's the star Sirius. They have called him the new Akhenaten, and I talked about that last week. It's quite interesting also that the election was full of Sirius dog references, from Sarah Palin's pit bull jokes to the top priority of the Obama family choosing a dog for their little girls. The dog could not have long hair because of Malia's allergy risks, so it was recommended that they choose a Peruvian hairless breed. The breed of dog dates back 3,000 years and is depicted in pre-Hispanic ceramics. It's also perfect for kids who are sensitive to dogs. It also looks similar to the Barker or Anubis. Very interesting choice of dogs, I think. Very interesting choice. Obama said that the dog would hopefully be a mutt like him, another dog reference. Goes back to Barky, it goes back to the clown Barker. Now remember that Dr. James David Manning referred to Obama as the Joker. That's a strange reference when you consider that in advertising for The Dark Knight, the Joker would say, why so serious? Or, if you reword it, why so serious? Okay. Interesting enough, it just triggers the same meaning again and again and again. It's kind of like black magic, isn't it? The second swearing-in ceremony was done on the 21st of January without a Bible, and this has sparked speculation about Obama's religious affiliation. However, the second swearing-in was reported in the news on January 22, 2009. It was the first full day that Obama was president, and it is also a date that is highly coincidental with Dr. Manning's Joker reference because of the coincidental date configurations, and here they are. January 22nd is the anniversary date of Heath Ledger's death. Heath Ledger died on January 22nd, 2008, exactly 1 year later. He was announced as getting the posthumous election in the Academy Awards as Best Supporting Actor, which I think is interesting. And it was for the portrayal of the Joker. Okay? That's kind of coincidental, isn't it? Same day as if by some cosmic joke, a man dressed as a clown walked into a Belgian daycare with a knife and killed 3 people the same day. He dressed up like the Joker and he killed 3 people. Kim DeGelder was arrested after 2 babies and 1 of their guardians was stabbed to death in a gruesome attack that stunned Belgium. The killer was described as a movie fanatic. Gelder is said to have quoted Heath Ledger from the Batman film when he was arrested, and according to witnesses' statements and police drawings, the suspect had painted his face white, blackened his eyes, and had colored his lips red. He was nicknamed Satan because of his long black hair, and there's even a creepier coincidence. Take a look at the name Gelder, and what's it an anagram for? Here we go. L-E-D-G-E-R. Ledger. Creepy, isn't it? Yeah. It just writes itself, people. It just writes itself. There seems to be a cosmic relationship with events and the collective unconscious is responding to them, and it seems that in ritual and in ceremony, these concepts can be activated in form that can only be described as magic. Now, when I talk about magic, I'm saying magic that is loosely meaning that there is no real explanation for the words that have been pronounced and the importance of them being pronounced correctly. There are thought forms that drift in the ether, and it seems that their relationships are constantly coming together in a form of causality. Or it could be one big coincidence. I highly doubt it. I highly doubt it's a coincidence. I find myself being concerned over the forced similarities or forced meme programming about Barack Obama and Abraham Lincoln. Everybody hear these concepts by applause? Hear that? The comparisons? It frightens me, and I'll tell you why. I remember when I was a kid, I used to read comic books, and they used to talk about the wicked comparisons and everything between Kennedy and Lincoln. Anybody remember those by applause when you were a kid? You were told about them? Yeah. Just goes to show you that Lincoln's kind of a freaky guy, and so is Kennedy. I mean, first of all, Lincoln was elected in 1860. Kennedy was in 1960, about 100 years apart. Both men were assassinated on a Friday in the presence of their wives. Each wife had lost a child while living in the White House. Both men were killed by a bullet that entered the head from behind. Lincoln was killed in Ford's Theater. Kennedy met his death while riding in a Lincoln convertible made by the Ford Motor Company. I mean, just really interesting coincidences. Both men were succeeded by vice presidents named Johnson, who were Southern Democrats and former senators. Andrew Johnson was born in 1808. Lyndon Johnson was born in 1908, exactly 100 years later. It's a really weird. I mean, there's more than what I'm giving you, but there's a lot of weird coincidences about Lincoln and Kennedy. And now they're trying to put these coincidences together with Obama, apparently trying to put him together with Lincoln as some sort of a unifying figure. They're both from Illinois. They both are looked as presidents who want to improve race relations. And like Lincoln, Obama understands the power of presidential oratory. However, the Lincoln comparisons have their drawbacks. They must be understood in order for us to figure out what's going on with the future. Some of these things have to be avoided because Lincoln wasn't always the great guy. Okay, I mean, change is a lot more than you realize when you play with Lincoln. Okay, and they actually had the Bible that they first used. It was Lincoln's Bible they first used during the first swearing-in ceremony, which I thought was also kind of creepy. But like Lincoln, and in Lincoln's day, civil war and national unrest are unavoidable as we plunge into this new world order that they're talking about. Now, if you pay attention, it's already been invoked, the new world order. All we can do now is just wait for the moment when the war at home begins. And that's going to be soon because that is what is going to be the future. And it was invoked, and I'll point out in a minute what I mean by that. Go ahead.
Well, if the comparison is Obama to Lincoln, one critical element missing is that Lincoln's life in political office began well before he was president in the late 1830s. 1838 was when he gave his speech about we will not be destroyed by a foreign country. If we die, it's death by suicide. That was 22 years before he was president.
Right.
So yeah, you would have to look at Obama 20 years in the past to see what his political career was when he was, I don't know, in his mid-20s, early 30s.
Right.
To do a comparison with him and Lincoln.
Sure. We'd have to look in that and see if there's anything, any comparisons. It's just that this whole thing about Civil War is in our future because it was hidden in the words and speeches of Barack Obama when he started his campaign, his final campaign in Philadelphia, when he was on the train, and then, of course, ending it at the inauguration. What he had said is he had said that we are preparing to, quote, finish the work of perfecting our union, referring to America as an unfinished working. Remember what the word working means. An unfinished working. It means an unfinished spiritual working, sojourn, or perhaps even a spell. It is the unfinished working, or a union that is about to be perfected. The symbol of the unfinished pyramid on the dollar bill means the unfinished working. It's because there's no top to the pyramid. It's a pyramid that's constantly being built. The unfinished working can also be referenced in the Gettysburg Address. Lincoln spoke of the unfinished work, meaning the United States. The Union will be perfected by the Great Civil War. Obama repeats this charge and has made it his theme throughout the final days before the inaugural. He says that, and I'll show you the quote, that we will have to change the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, maybe even our borders. This is what he said. He said, what is required is the same perseverance and idealism that our founders displayed. What is required is a new Declaration of Independence, not just in our nation, but in our own lives. We should never forget that we are the heirs of those early patriots, ordinary men and women who refused to give up when it all seemed so improbable, and who somehow believed that they had the power to make the world anew. That is the spirit that we must reclaim today. What is required is a new Declaration of Independence. What is required is to make this country new again. What has to happen before we have a new Declaration of Independence, or a new Bill of Rights, or a new Constitution? What needs to happen? There needs to be a division between the people, a separation, and then eventually a coming together, a civil war. It's in his speeches now. Remember what I told you about the speeches that George W. Bush gave, and I pointed out what eventually happened. The angel that rides in the whirlwind meaning war, and then his presidency was foiled by a huge whirlwind that destroyed the southeastern part of the United States. This was all part of the ritual known as the inauguration, and if it's not important to keep the words together and to do it right, then why does the Constitution make it so? Because it is an incantation, it is a spell, and it is a ritual that needs to be done to the T. And when the words are pronounced, when things like a new Declaration of Independence is mentioned, when things like declaring the country anew, to change those things, to basically change our borders and change the way we are, I start paying attention. Go ahead.
I was listening too for Angel Riding in the Whirlwind, you know, item to come up in his speech, and that never happened. But he did mention that storms, great storms, were coming to America, and left them as vague as that.
Yeah. And then they mentioned the whirlwind in the Associated Press news. Obama, obviously, with his speeches, sees his administration as the capstone to the unfinished working. The alchemical pyramid, the symbol of the sun or the all-seeing eye that shall rise above it all. However, in order to get the top of the unfinished working, there has to be a struggle. To fight to get to the top of the pyramid, there has to be a war and a struggle. The all-seeing eye is also the eye of the great architect mentioned in Freemasonry, which I think is interesting enough because if you take a look at the swearing-in ceremony, you see that this is the second one. The Chief Justice is there. He has his hand up. He doesn't have his hand on the Bible, but there's a picture behind Barack Obama. That picture is actually Benjamin Latrobe. He is known in Freemasonry as the great architect of the state capitol. He was also the great architect of most of Washington, D.C. So Barack Obama was sworn in, and the witness behind him was a picture of the great architect. Does that mean anything? Of course it does. Was it by accident? Who knows? But it just goes to show you of the irony and the strangeness and the synchronicity of what's going on with our country. The magic is what I call it. The great architect is watching. This trickster is doing what he can. Now, on the far left of this picture, you see the Oval Office rug that was seen during the Clinton-Bush era. The new sunburst floor and rug in the center and on the right was designed by Laura Bush and was also incorporated for the new look of the Obama office. The symbolism speaks volumes. Notice it's a huge sun. We talked about Amun-Ra, the sun god. Now Akhenaten comes into his new sun home. It's funny how it changed from that plain rug to that sunburst rug. Does anybody remember what a sunburst means usually on a flag or when a country uses a sunburst or a swastika? Like Japan? Yeah. Signs and symbols are all in play there. They're all there. Most of the American people are unaware of what is happening in the new face to bring about some old tricks there. Future will again grasp onto the spoils of war. The war itself will be seen here at home. That is why we're seeing the symbolism. I remember when I lived in Argentina, the interesting thing, I think I skipped over something. I wanted to show you. Where is it? Maybe I got rid of the graphic. I don't know. I had a graphic that, it was a graphic of the flags. And I wanted to point out that, somebody mentioned Japan. Japan had just the red sun in the middle of the white emblem, but then they changed it for war to look like an emblem with rays coming out of it. Of course, Germany had their regular flag of bands, and then they changed it with the swastika, which was also a sun symbol. Okay. And then when I lived in Argentina, it was Argentina's flag was a teal flag. It was white and two tops of turquoise or teal color. But when they were at war, when the police state took over, they replaced the middle with a sun symbol. So, and when you remember, Barack Obama has a sun symbol as well as his symbol for his campaign. You need to pay attention to these things because this is something that it's like history repeating itself. These symbols are powerful. They are sigils, okay? We've talked about sigils. They are made powerful. They are there to capture your attention whether you know it or not. It's like what Carl Jung talked about, the collective unconscious. The collective unconscious responds to certain symbols and images and words. When those words and images are triggered, you react. It's an experiment. It's the crowd experiment. I know these things because I've studied esoteric knowledge. That's why I'm bringing them up to you. Magic is being used to captivate and hold the audience there. You don't know what it all means until somebody sits you down and explains it to you. That's what I'm trying to do here tonight. Okay? Civil war or civil unrest or civil discontent is going to be here soon. It's not going to be terrorism from overseas. It's going to be homegrown. It's going to be raised here, and it's going to start the division. When you have divisive prayers and benedictions, such as you had with Reverend Lowry, when you have Dr. Manning calling Barack Obama a joker, when you have the Joker meme triggered at the same time that Obama was sworn in on that day, when Heath Ledger gets nominated for the Joker on that same day, and then a man in Belgium walks in, kills three people, dressed as the Joker, who's got a name that's the same as Ledger, but rearranged letters, I really, really think that that's pretty fucking creepy. And I know that these things won't get reported in the mainstream news. That's why the Ground Zero Lounge exists. That's why every Monday we get together here and we talk about these things, because they are relevant and they are fascinating, and the world is a fascinating place. This is not being told to you to frighten you. It's being told to you because I want you to know that the world is a fascinating place. And you can turn it into a positive or you can turn it into a negative. It's not negative to point out the obvious. It's not negative to tell you, look at what's happening. That there's some mind behind the whole affair. There's something greater than you and I. There's something that's more transcendent than just watching politics on television. There are methods to the madness. There are reasons the chess pieces are being moved along the board. There are reasons why certain people go to war, and there are reasons why your paycheck is not coming through. There are reasons why you're not getting a job. It's because there are people pushing your buttons, and they're running you from the highest levels. Now, the way to get your independence is to pay attention. The way to gain some strength is to be aware. Realize that words do matter. Those magic words you were told when you were a kid, please, thank you, I love you. Those are words that you can use every day to improve your life. And I hope that we use those words and phrases and we don't abuse them and we try to put meaning behind them. People always ask me, Clyde, what's your solution? I say, we need to love each other. That's too simple. No, it needs to be done because a lot of people really, really haven't had the opportunity to feel love. If we did, then maybe we'd be feeling a lot better about ourselves. I mean, my whole life I've been seeking it. I think, you know, as much as you try to love each other, eventually someone's going to come into your life and love you. I'm very happy right now because I do have someone that I love, and I have a lot of people like you that I love. I was ready to give up because this whole world's freaking dysfunctional. But it's changing, and it's going to be positive because the more we see this negativity, the more we want to go towards the positive. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just thinking about words and listening to the inauguration speech, and Obama called out the four dominant religions, and he talked about Christianity, Muslims, Judaism, and Hindus, and then he also called out the unbelievers, and I thought that was the non-believers. I thought it was really interesting, seeing as what maybe like 20% of the world are atheist or agnostic, and I fall into that category, and I take serious offense to the idea that I'm considered a non-believer. Like, I have no faith in anything. And it's an interesting idea, interesting concept of words defining a situation, you know. Just personifying a false idea.
That's exactly, really very good. Thank you. Give him a hand for that, because it's exactly what I was trying to say last week. You don't have a label, a word to define you. You're pushed out. If you don't believe in Barack Obama, you're pushed out. If you don't believe in a Republican, you're pushed out. Democrat, you're pushed out. Come on, people. The polarization has to be over, but it's still continuing, right? Are you a Jew, a Muslim, or a Christian? Are you red state, blue state? No, it's the state versus you. It's always been that way. It'll always be that way. Go ahead.
I felt by slipping non-believers in there, Obama was merely pandering, and I feel it would have been a much better move to say, and all other belief systems in this fine country, or something along those lines. I think he really screwed up there.
Okay. Go ahead.
When you're saying pushed out, you're like bringing up Ratso Rizzo's line from Midnight Cowboy, Dustin Hoffman, when he said, you can't walk anymore, they'll take you away. You know, they'll get you off the street.
Right.
You know? They'll remove you.
Right. Go ahead.
You got to remember, this is early on, and people like me who are agnostic, non-believer, skeptics, we don't have a say in anything, it seems like. And I just think it's good that he mentioned non-believers. So does my sister. My sister got goosebumps when he said it. So, you know, like in the 60s, you know, if the president would have brought, you know, people like black people or whoever were being oppressed at the time into his speech, I just think it's a good thing. That's myself.
Okay. Yeah, give him a hand for that too, because, you know, I don't know what I believe in that. I do believe, however, that I have been talking about the ecumenical umbrella, and I think that's a part of the ecumenical umbrella. You know, the state religion has to be forged in order for things to function properly. Otherwise, it's not going to work. We've got to get people to start thinking on the same level. I think that the way they're going to bring us together in an ecumenical brotherhood is to tell us that there's life out in space. And if you've been paying attention, yeah, somebody's applauding that. They're going to tell us that life is out there in space, which basically takes away your uniqueness. You are no longer unique if you find out that there's little gray men out there. Because God didn't just bless this little planet, and God didn't just poop out this little planet and say, oh, creation. He did several others with the same types of creation. Maybe there are rocks that breathe on Mars, but they do know that there's methane being shot up in Mars, and there's life somewhere underneath all that rock and ice. I'm not talking about UFOs, even though how many people heard about the UFO at the inaugural by applause? Anyone? They're touting on CNN that while Obama was speaking, they saw a UFO fly over the crowd. Now, I don't think it was a UFO. I think it was a bird. But CNN's talking like, oh, some miraculous UFO. It's all part of the mystique. It's all part of the mystery that is Barack Obama. The most mysterious president we've ever had is Barack Obama. The name, Barack Hussein Obama. The regnal name from Barry Satoru. President Satoru. It doesn't have a ring to it, but President Obama sounds even better. See? It's all a part of the great show that is the United States of America. And that great show is going to have its crescendo within the next year to 2 years. Biden said so. Obama's hinted at it. The whole Lincoln-Obama thing is kind of creepy. Get ready for it, because it's going to be interesting. Get ready for apologies. Get ready for confessions. Get ready for more things staying the same. And get ready for possibly, the indictment of the old people that used to run this country just a couple days ago. I get the feeling that that's kind of the meme, too, is that they want to prosecute Bush and Cheney and all these guys. They're just waiting for the right moment. Now, if that happens, that's really going to change our minds, too, right? Because that could get people all divided, too. Because we believe with all our hearts that these people are out for our best interests, but they really aren't. I wouldn't care. I would jump for joy if Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld and all those guys were tried at The Hague. I would love it. But there are other people that aren't so happy about stuff like that. Because they believe with all their hearts that these men are looking out for them. But I've said before, their morals are not your morals, and they never will be. And we can't put our faith in men. We've got to put faith in ourselves. Remember, the magic words, I love you. Try them sometimes. They work. Karaoke from Hell's up next. I'm Clyde Lewis. This is Ground Zero Lounge. Good night, and thank you all for coming out.